Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, December 22nd. I'm Ray Graff. Well, it's official. Winter is upon us. If you remember last year, Mother Nature took it easy on us. This year, we've already had some cold weather and a fair amount of snow. So today, we welcome back News Channel 13 meteorologist Jason Goff to answer your weather questions. He's always a popular guest, and there are always many weather questions, so I suggest you get in line early. 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. We talk snow, wind chills, perhaps the odd polar vortex. You never know. Jason Goff is here. We'll be back with your calls coming up on Vox Pop. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Well, as of yesterday, winter is officially here. This time of year, especially, winter weather affects nearly everything we do when we travel, whether we have to bundle up to get the mail. Joining us on the show today to talk about all of that is our favorite meteorologist, Jason Goff of WNYT News Channel 13 in Albany. His forecasts have been heard on these airwaves. He is a well-known fixture in our region. Give us a call now if you have a question for Jason. 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email the program, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org is our email address. But the phone number is 800-348-2551. 2551. First and foremost, Jason Goff, is the Christmas shopping done?
It is. It
wow.
is. But I always, you know, I enjoy going still out to the mall on Christmas Eve day just because it's just, I don't know. It's
do, fun. To enjoy my misery?
No. Everybody has a good time, you know. They're
really?
Out there. Yeah. Everybody's in a good mood, I think. I always have a good time, you know, sit and have a pop somewhere and then just do a little shopping and head home. It's great.
Get the stocking stuffers and whatnot.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Good for you, man. Well, I got a ways to go.
Do you?
I'm just kicking it in gear now.
That's
so the weather
right.
will be all right for my
weather,
travels?
Yeah, the weather will be fine. We had, obviously, a little bit of a slow commute this morning, but just walking in the studios here, the sun is breaking out. Temperatures are coming up. And really, you know, it's going to be – we've had a couple of cold days, as you well know, over the last
Absolutely.
Week. But now that winter's begun, we're going to be in the 40s for the most part through Christmas Day.
You know, it amazed me, the cold snap we had last week, where we hit – I think we hit zero. I don't know if we went below zero.
We got to one. Officially in Albany, yes.
The interesting thing was you could see it track. If you watched the weather over days prior, and I'm not talking about meteorologists. I'm talking about people like me, just average people. You could see, oh, here it comes from the Northwest now.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's in the Midwest. It's coming to us. It'll be here tomorrow. And by
yep.
golly, it was right on the money.
Yep, it sure was. That's just the way we roll this time of year. And, you know, I mean, what we watch for this time of year especially, because, you know, we get fronts year-round. But this time of year, it's really important, like, is the front coming from the Arctic? Or is it coming from the Pacific? That's a humongous difference.
Right.
So, you know, when it comes from the Pacific, we don't generally cool down a whole heck of a lot behind it. But the Arctic fronts are the ones that just, it's like a big bowl, man. It goes all the way down to like D.C. and that just catches all that cold air and it just sits.
And the term you hate the most, of course, is polar vortex. Right. So let's get it out of the way right now. And bombogenesis, right? There's that one too?
Oh, no, that's a good one.
You like that one?
Bombogenesis is good, yeah. Well, that's a real meteorological term. So is polar vortex to an extent. But
and the polar vortex, for those of us who don't know, is?
It's just like a big belt of air that just circles the North Pole. And once in a while, when things begin to slow down in the atmosphere, the winds and such, it just kind of sags down, literally. And that's what sort of allows that colder air to drain in our way. But, you know, when you get these buckles in the jet stream like we certainly had last year and to some extent this year a little bit.
And that was because of El Nino?
Yes. Yep. That just kind of tends to shoot everything up from the Pacific. And, you know, sometimes you'll hear about in the Northwest and in California, the so-called Pineapple Express. You get this just literally a river of moisture coming up from Hawaii and so on. That's
yeah.
where they call it the Pineapple Express.
Right.
Pretty cool stuff.
So we had not much. I think I was telling you before the show, I don't think I used my snowblower once last
mm-hmm.
year. How much have we had so far in the greater Capital District, bearing in mind that we cover a great distance?
Oh, yeah. It really depends. I mean, because, yeah, right, WAMC goes all the way up to the Canada border and then down south.
And into New Hampshire,
into
Westchester and all over. But
so,
in this area, how much snow have we had?
Well, officially, which is what we go by with the National Weather Service office in Albany, before this morning, 10.6
really?
inches of
More
snow.
More than I
yeah.
thought.
Well, it's just kind of come in little dribs and drabs, you know, and I don't know what we officially had this morning, but, you know, less than an inch in most spots. A couple of spots got a little bit more, but it was the timing of the snow this morning which had us leading our 11 o'clock newscast last night, just because, you know, if it falls at 2 in the afternoon, it's not a huge deal, but when it starts at 6 and it stops at 9, it just slows everything down.
Any big things in the future that you see possibly as far as snow events?
No, not in the near future, but I'll tell you what, Ray, it looks like things are certainly a lot different from last year. And, you know, I always tell people, in order for us to get a decent snow, you have to first have the door open. And what I mean by that is you have to have the airflow has to be just right. And what we call the Atlantic Oscillation has to be negative. So it actually will draw storms closer to the coast, because otherwise they'll scoot out to our south, or they'll kind of rake the coast. One of those deals where, like, you know, Central Park will get 18 inches and we'll get 2.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, and it hits the so-called I-95 corridor. So at least the door has been open for that. But I know, you know, the ski spots are stoked because this is a big week coming up for them next week and all of that. So, you know, at least for those folks, it's cold enough to make snow for the
right.
most part. Although Monday looks pretty mild in the mid-40s, but that's, you know, here in the valley. So they'll be in good shape.
Well, that's great. That is great for them. I know most people find it romantic for a nice white Christmas with a mm-hmm. big storm, but frankly, those of us who have to shovel the stuff aren't that crazy. I remember, I think it was about the year maybe 2000, we had a big Christmas storm.
02 it was.
Was
yeah.
it 02?
I was wearing shorts in Texas at the time.
Oh,
but
lucky
yeah,
you.
2002.
Yes. Yeah. So, several shoveling bouts that day. Let's go to Ted in Pleasant Valley. Ted, you're first.
Hi there, guys. Jason and Ray.
Hi.
Hey, listen, I have a question. In my neighborhood, I mean, I could go a mile away and there's almost no snow. In my house, it piles up all the time. And if they're calling for 4 to 6 inches, I know I'm getting 9. You
wow.
know what I mean?
That's a big discrepancy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I know. And I pick a flat spot, like I have a picnic table. So there's no drifting. It's all piled up, right? I put my ruler in there. It's always higher.
What's your elevation?
And if I go
there?
A mile away, it's like very little happened in the way of snow.
Mm-hmm. Well,
yeah.
it just, you know, I hear that from a lot of different people. They'll say, you know, out in Schenectady County, we get this and whatever. At the end of the day,
yeah.
what happens is, you know, there are so many little microclimates around here, and it's all, well, not all, but a lot of it is based on elevation. So
uh-huh.
it depends on your wind direction. It depends on how much moisture we have around. So, for example, you know, I always talk about like the hills of Rensselaer and Columbia counties, right? So you may not get a whole lot of snow, say, in Troy, at least down in the lower part of Troy there. But as soon as you get up toward RPI and then head farther east from there out toward West Sand Lake, there's quite a difference. So, uh-huh. you know, it just depends. And there are little pockets. So when we come up with our little snow contours map, as we call it,
uh-huh.
you know, it would be impossible. I mean, people would go dizzy if we really tried to pinpoint
yeah.
it, which we're not
okay.
going to be able to do anyway. So,
okay.
you know, we'll try to give you a general idea, and that's
yeah.
about it.
Yeah.
Well, thanks,
yeah,
Ted.
I know that. I was just wondering if there was a reason for why this happened.
But what is your elevation there, Ted?
Gosh, it's not too high, Ray.
Yeah.
It's like I'm right on the Taconic Highway.
Okay. Yeah, so, you know, it just depends on wind direction is a huge thing. You know, this time of year you can get upslope snows, and that, you know, that's why the lake effect bands sometimes will kind of get disjointed or they'll discontinue, if you will, across the valley, and then they'll take off again as you head over Rensselaer County, Steventown, and over into western New England. It's just the way it rolls around here.
Ted, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. That's so interesting. Some people in the newsroom live up in the hills of Voorheesville way,
mm-hmm.
and they're up. You know, on the near the Helderbergs, the top.
Yep.
And oftentimes they'll say, well, you got a big storm there. We had nothing. We watched it, but we watched it from afar, but it didn't hit. Is there something about the contours of the earth that will affect whether you're getting storms?
No, not necessarily. Again, a lot of it has to do with your wind direction and where, you know, the moisture's coming from, and you'll have obviously widespread snows, and then some spots will get a lot more than others. But it's usually, you know, when you head out into the Helderbergs, they'll get a lot of snow.
Well, I was thinking more in terms of thunderstorms, actually.
Oh, thunderstorms, that's a different story, too. Yeah, that's a lot more of a, say, an isolated event, so to speak, where you can watch these storms, and they'll come up and they'll hammer one spot, and you can, sometimes you'll see a storm and you'll have sun the whole time. It
yeah.
just depends. So,
all right, let's go to Michael in Westfield. Michael, you're on.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello, Michael.
Oh, your connection's bad, man. Hello?
Oh, man, he's been on hold a while, too.
Give it a shot. Give it another try here, Michael. Hello?
Hey.
Oh, your connection is terrible, my friend. Try it again. Give us another call. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. And Jason Goff is our guest. So no big snow event for Christmas, and I'm happy about that.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, like I said, Christmas Eve day, we'll have a few showers around, maybe in, you know, just in the morning, and then a few rain showers perhaps in the afternoon. But just, you know, it's not going to be a big deal for traveling, you know, Saturday night. It's the first night of Hanukkah, of course, Christmas Eve. So, you know, people go to midnight mass and they have their Hanukkah celebrations and stuff. We won't have to worry about traveling, which is good. Back to what you were saying before, as we get to elevation, it's amazing that, and I always talk about the actual physical building of News Channel 13. We're in Menance, just to the north of the Albany line.
Right.
And we're kind of down at the bottom of a big hill, right? You go up the hill and Memorial Hospital's there and Wolfert's Roost. I've been up by Wolfert's Roost there on Van Rensselaer, and it's snowing, and I've come down the hill to go to the station, and it's raining.
Isn't something?
You're talking about, I don't know, maybe 100 feet in difference. So that's when we are like, holy crow, this is a tough time to forecast. But typically you'll see that more in the transitional seasons, fall and spring.
You make a point that I thought of this morning. You know, when we do our forecast, we'll tag it with weather conditions from three or four different places. And one spot in Massachusetts today, 37 degrees this morning before my newscast, and snow.
Mm-hmm.
And yet another place will be 37 and rain. Why? How can that happen?
It just, you know, when you are forecasting or you're looking at things, it's all about the thickness of the cold air. And so that's why you get different precipitation types. So it's a lot easier to show it visually, but I'll do my best to explain it on the radio. So when you have warm air from the ground all the way up, obviously then you get rain. When you have cold air from the ground all the way up, you get snow. It's when you get these layers of cold and warm air mixed that you get different things. So when you get something like freezing rain is actually a misnomer. When you have freezing rain, you have a lot of warm air aloft, and it could be as low as, you know, like the example I gave you before with, you know, Van Rensselaer Boulevard and South Pearl Street. So you have like a real shallow layer of cold air. So what happens is the ground is frozen, but the rain falls and it doesn't have time to freeze before it hits the ground. So then it hits and it freezes on contact. That's freezing rain. Now, sleet is sort of the opposite of that, where you have a much deeper layer of cold air, and so the rain drops basically have time to freeze on their way down. So sleet is actually frozen rain. Okay,
gotcha.
But freezing rain is that. So it all depends on where they are, but you can have a real, say, shallow layer of, say, 36 degrees, like you say, but it's cold just above that, and so the snow doesn't even have time to melt before it hits the ground, but generally it's going to do that.
I understand. Jason Goff is our guest. It is 800-348-2551 if you want to call in with your weather question, and we'll be right back on Vox Pop.
Support comes from Curran Compliance Services, Inc., Greenwich, New York, and Mendota Heights, Minnesota, serving life insurance carriers and their distribution partners, offering DOL fiduciary rule compliance training. CurranCompliance.com. Colby Attorney Service, document filing, document and information retrieval, and other services including legal publishing and corporate record searches. ColbyService.com. NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses. NBTBank.com. And Sage Wine and Spirits, Ballston Spa, New York, providing worldwide sustainable and organic wines and spirits, offering weekly tastings. SageWineSpirits.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551. We may or may not be having issues with the phones today, so if you have a question and you're having some trouble connecting, feel free to email voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. Jason Goff is our guest today, meteorologist at News Channel 13. Here's an email that came in from Douglas. Okay. What effect does magnetism have on the weather? EMF emissions, question mark? Oh, you got to turn his mic on there, Zach. He'll be much better.
There we go. I don't know, to be honest with you. That's not...
Magnetism and weather.
Magnetism and weather. I'm stumped.
Really?
It's something that I would have to look up before I could try to, you know, talk about it a little bit. But magnetism and weather, because you're talking about, you know, the cryosphere versus the atmosphere. Now, everything is connected, of course, but...
you need some magnetism.
Well, of course.
Mars has almost none, has no magnetic field.
Mm-hmm.
They have a very limited... I think our phones just went completely dead here. Mars has a very limited magnetic field and their weather conditions, very limited atmosphere. And all right, well, there you go. So that's the question we can't answer, and it came in via email.
Yeah,
that,
I'm
really
sorry
going,
about
going
that.
Well.
It is.
My screen just went completely dead here.
Oh, boy. Well,
that's all right.
Well, we'll do our best, and we'll be able to carry through. Yeah, I'm sorry. I feel like a dope when I can't answer a question every once in a while, but it's... You know, I didn't study a whole lot of geology, so I'm
right.
Sorry about that.
Our email address here is voxpop@wamc.org. The phone number, and it may work, is 800-348-2551. Let's give it a shot. We'll go to Skip in, where are you calling from, Skip?
Hey, guys, I'm in Dingman's Ferry, Pennsylvania. How
hey,
are you?
Welcome to the show.
Wow, okay.
You're on.
Yeah, thanks for letting me call in. Hey, Jason, I had a question. I run an outdoor education center in Pennsylvania, and one of the things we've been interested in doing is trying to get one of the automated surface weather stations here, either I think it's ASOS or AWOS.
Yeah, the ASOS. And,
Yeah, and I think one of them is managed by the Weather Service, and the other one might be managed by the FAA. And I've been trying like crazy online to try and figure out how to apply for one or see if we could get one sited here. And I'm just wondering if you have any advice to give.
Well, tell me where exactly you are in Pennsylvania.
So we're in the Poconos.
Okay.
We're about 10 miles from New York and about 10 miles from New Jersey.
Okay.
Right in the northeast corner of Pennsylvania.
All right, so I believe that is your home National Weather Service office would be out of Upton, which is the New York City weather office. I'll tell you what you can do. Why don't you email me? My email address is jgoughj@wnyt.com. And what I'll do is I'll make a couple of phone calls, and you know, because you are dealing with the federal government when you get into that realm, and that's, you know, sometimes things don't move as quickly as they should or you might want them to. But there are other ways as well that you can get weather stations. There's a really good, and they've been around forever, called Weather Underground, and you can tie into stations there. And I also have a link, because somebody emailed me the other day and asked me about buying something for their nephew for Christmas, like a personal weather station.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
So I'll email you that link as well, because maybe you guys could get a grant or something. They're not all that expensive anyway, but you could get a grant and actually get into a network like that too. So just shoot me an email,
and I'll
do my very best to help you out in that regard.
Hey, Skip, where are you listening? Are you listening on our Milford, Pennsylvania transmitter?
Sometimes in my car, yes, but in my home, I listen online.
Oh, good.
Hey,
okay.
Man, we really appreciate you calling from Pennsylvania. Thanks a lot. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Well, as you know, while you handle that call deftly, I've been rebooting the computer.
Okay.
We may or may not be in business here.
All right.
So we'll find out. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. We're going to go to Carol in Johnsonville. I want you to keep your fingers crossed.
They're crossed.
All right. And Carol in Johnsonville, are you there?
Oh, yes. I just wanted you to talk about global warming.
Oh, boy. Well,
before you start, and go, feel free to answer, Jason. We do shows on that. Jason is more or less a meteorologist, not a climatologist, but I'm sure he'll try to answer your question. But we do separate shows on global warming. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, we really try to keep this show on to weather and you know, the difference between weather and climate is that weather is day to day and climate is sort of an average of weather over time. So that's something that Ray and I have talked about, and I'll be glad to come in and do a climate show as well. So I'll give kind of my standard answer to that, Carol, in that A, global warming is real. It doesn't make any difference whether people believe it or not. You can stand outside in the rain and say it's not raining. It doesn't mean that it's not raining. So that's basically it. You know, the Earth is warming. Whether or not, you know, human beings have anything to do with it, I believe they do. To the extent, we don't know. And things are going to be certainly interesting as we proceed into the new year with all of the changes going on in Washington. We'll see how it works out. But that's where we're at.
And the last show we did on this was with a Union College professor who was terrific. And so we'll do, Carol, we'll do that again in 2017. Thank you very much for the call. This one came in via email from Brandy, who says, "Hello, Ray," in quotations, and then Jason, not in quotations, so I'm not sure what that means. "I have heard predicting weather in the Hudson and Mohawk Valley is extremely complicated. Is this true, and what are some of the factors that contribute to the complications?"
Well, that's a great question, and we look at our area. Obviously, the WAMC listening area is a lot bigger than our viewing area is, the News Channel 13 viewing area. So we have 14 counties in our area that encompass the Mohawk Valley and the Hudson Valley. So what we look at is, first of all, you do look at elevation in terms of precipitation type.
Yeah.
More of a transitional season deal, fall and spring. But as we forecast, we try to figure out lots of different things. So it all is a function of elevation in that regard, as far as winter weather is concerned. All right, because you can obviously you get rain in the valleys, you can get snow in the higher elevations, but also winds can be funneled. So when we're stepping outside of the realm of winter weather, winds can be funneled down the Mohawk Valley, up or down the Hudson Valley, and the winds could actually become stronger. So we look at that from a wind aspect. That will help with scouring out some colder air, which is tough to kind of wedge out this time of year. So it depends if we get a good screaming south wind up the Hudson Valley. You know, that's a consideration when you're trying to determine, all right, we're going to go from snow to rain. So there are lots of factors that go into that. Now, as we make a transition into summer, there is something that is that's continuing to be studied out of University at Albany called the Hudson Valley Effect.
Mm.
And where that started was the storms that came across in 1995. There was a tornado that hit Great Barrington.
Right.
And that was a Mac Daddy tornado, one that we don't see in the Northeast very often. And it was born from a storm just east of Binghamton. It crossed over the Mid-Hudson Valley. And once it did, it really got in to a stronger cell. And the reasoning for that is the theory is that it got a lot more rotation because it had veering winds coming up. You had winds that were coming up the Hudson Valley. So really it acts like a funnel. So long story short, hopefully not too late, what we're looking at is, again, different changes in elevation present different forecasting challenges as far as, you know, really any kind of weather goes, especially winter weather.
So if you are in the Midwest where it's flat,
yes,
an easier job?
Yes, I have to say it is. And you know, the other thing here that makes the forecast a little bit more challenging are the proximity to water that we have, not only the Atlantic Ocean, but actually even the Great Lakes, and then sometimes even Lake Champlain. You can get a little bit of lake effect snow off of that. When my first television job was in Texas, the weather there was easier, in quotation marks, to forecast than it is here. When I was in school in Washington, D.C., that was a bear to forecast there. That I don't envy those folks at all, because a lot of times, especially when it comes to winter weather, that is just a hideous spot to try to nail forecasts.
I remember going to Long Island in the winters down at my grandmother's house when I was young, and it always struck me, you know, coming from Albany, going down to the island, it always felt so much warmer.
Mm-hmm.
So the moderating effect of the ocean, wouldn't that make the weather prediction easier?
Not necessarily, because down there, I mean, you're right. The water has a huge effect on air temperatures, because it does moderate it quite a bit. But when you're down there, especially trying to forecast winter storms, then it's all about the track.
Ah.
The track of the storm is huge. You know, if a storm is far enough offshore, then Long Island's going to get smacked with snow. We're going to get pretty much a whole lot of nothing. Now, if a storm tracks where we want it to, if you wanted a bunch of snow, The storm will go basically like just east of Montauk and over Cape Cod, which is going to be rain for those folks and even southern New England, and then snow as you get farther into New England. So it just depends on the tracks of those storms.
Jason Goff is our guest. He is a meteorologist at News Channel 13. Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Richard in Queensbury. Richard, you're on.
Hi. When I've seen Doppler radar on Channel 13,
yes.
You don't see it that much these days, but when you do, and there's a lot of heavy precipitation, rain or snow, there's a pie wedge missing to the east of your radar tower. Is there something blocking the radar at that point?
Yes, the mountains. That is our radar. Now we use obviously on our broadcast we use the radar from the National Weather Service office, which is obviously state of the art dual polarization radar, it's called, and then we also have a great radar ourselves up on Bald Mountain in just north of Troy. And so the beam and the way that everything is set up, it's a blind spot, and it's because of the mountains. So it's actually not a beam, but it's, you know, the radar sends out pulses of energy, and there's not really much there. So, yeah, you can see that when there's a whole slug of rain and there's a perfect pie wedge that comes right out of Bennington. So that's what it is. You can just blame the mountains.
Richard, thank you. Why is vertical and horizontal polarization better than just one or the other?
Well, it gives you an opportunity to see into the storm in levels more efficiently than the older radar. The dual pole radar, as it's called, is actually declassified Navy technology.
Uh-huh.
And they used to use that to detect incoming airplanes on their ships.
Interesting.
Well, airplanes, fighter jets, or whatever.
Right.
So what dual pole does is that it now allows people, you know, meteorologists to see inside the storm a little bit better. It doesn't necessarily detect things better as far as, like, you know, rain or snow or whatever. But what it does, especially in severe weather, you're able to see now what's sometimes called a debris ball, which you weren't able to see before. So you know that there are things going on in a storm that's rotating. So you can say, well, we haven't had visual confirmation of this tornado, but based on the velocities and based on what this return is showing us as a debris ball. So that allows us just to basically see the storm a lot better.
Wow.
Through that technology.
How do you calculate air temperature way up? Are you using infrared
Those
satellites?
Are satellites, yes.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Jason Goff is our guest. 800-323. No, that's our fund drive number. Wow.
Oh, boy.
Holy mackerel. 800-348-2551. Foreshadowing the fund drive. Oh, the horror. Steve in Oneonta. Steve, you're on.
Yeah, hey, how you doing? The difference between rime ice and clear ice as applicable to collecting on metal surfaces, most of the time you hear about pilots talking about it collecting on their wings and fuselage.
Yeah, as far as pilots are concerned, you know, you just don't want ice, period. And that's why you have planes that are, you know, when you're in the airport in January, you have planes that are being de-iced. And it's actually, people will kind of freak out a little bit. And I've told people on planes, no, this is really a good thing. And it's not the weight of the ice. It's actually you don't want the ice to change the shape of the wing, because then your aerodynamics get all goofed up and you don't get the lift that you need.
Bernoulli's principle no longer applies.
That's exactly right. So as far as, you know, rime ice versus clear ice, the rime ice is going to obviously be a little bit heavier. You can see rime even on the ground. And then the clear ice is when you're higher up into the clouds and you have kind of just a little bit less in terms of moisture content, but it's still enough to, for all intents and purposes, stick to the planes. And so that's something that they have to be aware of as well.
Steve, thank you very much. Over to Max in Del Mar. Max, you're on with Jason Goff.
Hi. I was wondering, how did you learn to write about the weather? What's it like to describe the weather for an audience? And what have you learned over the years about this process?
That's a great question. Yeah, I've never had that question
iambic
before.
Pentameter at all?
No. I don't even know what that is.
Right,
I hated English when
and
I was
whatnot,
in. No, that's a great question. You know, here's the thing, Max. When you're talking about weather, just like any other discipline that you're in, if you're a doctor, if you're a teacher, if you're whatever your profession is, you know, you have these so-called like industry terms, right? Where you're basically looking at things that, you know, you can talk to a fellow person in your discipline about. When you're talking about weather to people that otherwise don't know or quite frankly, don't care about the mechanisms that cause weather. You have to just present it to them in a way that they can understand it. My primary job as a meteorologist, a broadcast meteorologist, is to convey the forecast in ways that people understand so that when they turn the TV off or whatever, they know what the weather's going to be. That is my priority. So I'm not going to get in and talk about vorticity, advection, and all these other fancy things. What we're going to be talking about is, you know, here's the deal with the storms that are coming or this winter storm that's coming, and that's basically it. And especially now that people have, everybody has a smartphone and all that, and they have these little apps on there, we want to make it so that people can tune into us, they can get their forecast for their place more specifically than anywhere else, but they also that they can understand it. So that's what I've learned more than anything, and I've spent time with consultants to learn how to do that. It's not as easy as it sounds.
No.
Because it's easy to just get up there and spit out a bunch of mumbo jumbo. In fact, I'll tell you a really quick story. when I first, my very first time trying to do like an audition tape, and I was in Washington, D.C., and the folks there at the station were so great. And I had this director, and he was in my ear in my little IFB thing. So I'm just plugging along, man. I'm thinking, oh, man, this is easy. I can do this standing on my head. After about 2 minutes, I'm in like mid-sentence, and he says, whoa, stop. And I said, what? And he said, well, I just got a great lesson in weather, but is it going to rain or not?
Yeah, that's
and
it.
That's, and that was something that I never forgot because people, you know, they don't care about a lot of the intricacies of weather that I do. I just find it fascinating because I'm a weather geek. People tune in because they want to know what the forecast is, and that is my job.
So a long-range goal would be slow education?
I would love that. Yeah. I mean, one of the biggest compliments that I get is that people will say, well, I understand the mechanism behind this or the process behind that. And I want to be able to interject that in a little bit, but without getting going all Cliff Clavin on him. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to go nuts with him.
Understood. Over to Pete in Newburgh. Pete, you're on.
Yes, thank you. So if we want to know the weather in several different locations at once. I want to know the weather in Newburgh, and then I'm going to be traveling to Philadelphia. I'll need to know that tomorrow, and maybe another town. Where should we be looking? Because recently I looked at weather forecasts at the National Weather Service on America Online and at a local newspaper, and they were as different as one said 5 inches of snow and the other said nothing but rain. That's a big difference.
Boy, it sure is.
Where would you consider to be the most reliable?
You know, I...
News Channel 13.
Yeah, but
we're not in your listening area. No, you're not going to give us weather for Philadelphia.
No, I understand. I do have people, like some of our viewers, and I always encourage people on my Facebook page or whatever, like, hey, man, especially this time of year, if you're traveling somewhere, if you need a forecast, shoot me an email and I'll tell you. But outside of that, that's a difficult question to answer because generally what I'll do is I'll do the best that I can with a forecast for a specific area, and then I will check my forecast against the Weather Service office's forecast for that area as well. Because unless you there is an art to forecasting in a particular area. You sort of get used to it.
Yeah.
And you remember, say, oh, a couple of years ago, I remember this situation or this setup was this way. If you're in a different place, you know, take a guy like Kovacic, right? He's been doing weather since the late 70s, and he obviously knows his stuff well. If you were to take him and dump him off in like Salt Lake City, he would struggle there for a little while because it's a completely different thing than what he's used to doing.
Have you thought about doing that?
No.
Keep him?
So you would check your forecast against the National Weather Service?
Yeah, I would go to the National Weather Service forecast page. And you can pick out, you know, the Weather Service offices cover every square inch of the United States and beyond, too. But you can click on a certain area. So for Newburgh, your weather forecast office is going to be different than it is in Philadelphia, right? The Philadelphia one is in Mount Holly, New Jersey. So you can actually pull up a map and point and click, and it'll give you a forecast for that place.
Now, take an outfit like America Online. Where are they getting their forecasts from? They're not making their own, right?
We got to hit a break here in a minute, Pete, so quickly, Jason.
To be honest with you, I'm not familiar with America Online. So I would just go to your Weather Service office.
You see, America Online was a very old internet provider way back when.
AOL.
Yeah.
I see.
Ages 800-348-2551. We'll talk about all this during the break, and then we'll be back.
Support Support comes from Stavros, helping people with disabilities achieve their dreams. Offices in Amherst, Greenfield, and Springfield. Stavros.org for more information. Dr. Lucy Chapek, Latham, New York, plastic surgery dedicated to cosmetic surgery, laser treatments, and minimally invasive facial rejuvenation since 1996. Wishing WAMC listeners a happy and healthy holidays. CAPEKplasticsurgery.com. The University at Albany Theater Program, working to train the next generation of performers, designers, technicians, playwrights, and stage managers. albany.edu/theater. Waterwheel Village, Galway, New York, now shipping their extra sharp New York cheddar, imported specialties, and holiday treats for businesses and personal giving. waterwheelvillage.com. And Hudson Wine Merchants in Hudson, New York, offering selections for holiday meals, gifts, and everyday wines, curbside service and delivery available. RaiseYourGlass.hudsonwines.com.
Welcome back to Vox Pop. Ray Graff here. Jason Goff is our guest. Jason is meteorologist at News Channel 13, WNYT in Albany. A couple of quick emails here, Jason, and then we'll blast through as many calls as we can.
Yeah, we've got a bunch of them now.
Yeah, we do. This is from Tony. Why don't we hear about wind chill in the summer? If it's 90 with a 20-mile-an-hour wind chill, isn't the wind chill less than 90? He makes a point.
he does make a point. Yeah, but, you know, I don't know what the wind chill would be. It might be 86. Generally, when you look at it, when you look at a chart, and the Weather Service has put out a chart with this, wind chills start at 40 degrees and go down from there. So when the air temperature is 40 and you have no wind and the wind chill is 40 and then from there you go down, it's just like a little grid.
Standing offer. Next summer, when it's 90 and it's windy, if you say it's 90, but if the wind chill is 86, I will give you a six-pack.
You have yourself a deal.
All right. Let's go to Joe in Northampton. Why does the awful weather pattern, often called a wintry mix, have such a delightfully pleasant-sounding name? Seems like a bit of a misnomer. Why can't meteorologists use a more accurate term like cloud crap or sky vomit? Well, thank you, Joe. Thank you for making me read that.
I'll keep that in mind. I don't know that my news director would care for that very much, but
frankly,
it's pretty funny.
I'll be in trouble for reading it. Let's go to Michael's email. I'm in Sparrow Bush, New York, about 30 miles west of Middletown. When you give the weather report for the Hudson Valley, you mentioned Middletown. Is this Middletown, New York, or Middletown, Connecticut?
Middletown, New York.
Okay.
Yes.
Fair
enough.
But,
you know, we don't want to leave anybody in Connecticut out either, so we can do that.
All right, let's go to Ben on Route 20. Ben, you're on with Jason Goff.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Listen, I've got a real question. You know, the Farmer's Almanac and the meteorologist, how closely related are they and how accurate are they? And when they're right on, who gets the credit, the almanac or the meteorologist?
I love it, Ben. I love it.
That is great. Well, let me say this, and I'll try not to get, like, sued by the Farmer's Almanac folks. I love the Farmer's Almanac for some of the things that it does. I love the sort of the folklore that comes with it. Certainly very few human beings on the planet are more in tune with the weather than farmers are. As far as the actual forecasts go, you know, they're not very good. Not anybody's fault necessarily. It's just it's impossible to forecast out that far. Now, they always put a very good spin on things, but I remember a couple of years ago they had, for the state of Texas, for example, that it was going to be a cool, wet summer. And they set records in Waco and in Dallas for consecutive 100-degree days, and they had a massive drought. Now, you can't get any more wrong than
right.
that. But they, you know, hey, good for them. They put it out there. But whenever the Farmer's Almanac comes out and a lot of people will ask about it, I just say, you know what? Read about the stories and how the full moons got their name. But when you want weather, you got to come to me because otherwise it's just not going to do you very much good.
It's kind of like the secret sauce for Coke or the secret ingredients in the recipe. You don't know how they're doing it, right?
I don't. And all I know is that when I was in school, I did a paper on forecast accuracy, and I pick three entities. Me, something that's called persistence, which means that if you forecast tomorrow what today's weather is, you're going to be right two-thirds of the time. And then I did the Farmer's Almanac. I was at about 94%. Persistence is always 66, you know, on the average. And the Farmer's Almanac was about 35.
You should have added another one, just a big wheel that you spin.
Well, you could do that too.
Just and random
we, you know,
chance.
We'll see how that goes as well.
Let's go to Mark in Salem. Mark, you're on.
Yes, I have a question about condensation nuclei. That is the small particle that every raindrop forms on and every snowflake forms on, in order to give up its heat, it has to condense onto something solid.
Right.
So when it comes to snow, is that particle different, say, in general, than, say, the particle that would be on rain? For example, if sea salt on rain, and the snow is coming from Canada, so it might be a source that is more dust than sea salt. Do you know if there's a difference?
No, there won't be a difference. It just depends on the depth of the cold air, how much moisture is available, and of course then from that, they call it CCN, the cloud condensation nuclei, and then you get these little droplets that are in there, and then things will freeze on top of that. You can get different types of growth within snowflakes. You can get the snow grains. You can get those big flakes. It all depends on how much moisture, how much lift you have. But at the core, they're going to be the same thing.
Mark, thank you very much. We have so many interesting calls today, and here's another one. Matt in Albany. Matt, you're on.
Hey, man, I just got a question. Always wondered this even as a kid. So you got an F-5 coming into a small town that's going to take out. Couldn't they send a precision-guided missile and blow up that tornado?
Okay.
Well,
you've seen Sharknado, clearly, right?
I have not.
Oh, you must see Sharknado.
I haven't seen it either. I'll have to check that out.
I don't want to give it away. No spoilers.
Okay,
you should watch that. All right, go ahead.
I will check that out. Short answer... Matt, no.
No, you can't do it.
No, you can't do it. It would be nice, I suppose, but then it might lead to a host of other problems, like, you know, when the missile goes through the tornado, then where does it go and how much more carnage is there? And there have been attempts to actually try to deflect or control weather, especially in the 60s. There was a thing called Project Storm Fury. In a lab and in theory, it would work with a hurricane. It just doesn't work. There's so much energy in those things, you just can't even fathom it.
Still, Matt, I love the way you think. That's brilliant. That's outside the box. You blow up the tornado. How can you lose?
I love it. It'd be great.
Let's go to Laura in Sunderland, Mass. Laura, top that
Hi.
One.
Hi. Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about air pollution. And, Jason, do you change your weather forecast depending upon, like, the suspended particulates of the day? And what about cities? Do you change your what you describe is going to happen depending upon if it's central city or outside of a city? How does that go?
No, not necessarily. The deal with air pollution is, you know, and air chemistry is a whole subset of meteorology. Certainly they do a lot of studying of that. In different places in the Mid-Atlantic, there's up in Anne Arundel County, for example, in Maryland, which is right near where Annapolis is and all that, they have some of the worst air pollution in the country. And so what you tend to do is a couple of different things. You will look at the air quality, and those are generally run by state agencies that are in charge of monitoring that. Obviously, in New York, it's DEC, and they'll keep an eye on that. And what you can actually get is levels of ozone at the ground. Now, ozone in the stratosphere is great. Ozone on the ground is not. And essentially, the weather conditions to make that is that you have to have light wind and a lot of heat so that the sun actually cooks and it adds another oxygen atom.
So it's O3?
It's O3, yeah. So that's just the way that works. And then they'll put out the respective advisories or whatever on that. But as far as an actual forecast goes, it doesn't affect our forecast. In other words, we just took the other call before about cloud condensation nuclei, and then you know, it's not going to, for example, create more rain. The Chinese actually tried to do that for the Beijing Olympics,
sure,
because the pollution over there is absolutely deplorable.
So the suspended particulates don't act as a nucleus for rain or snow.
In theory, they could, but
they tried that, though, right?
They have.
Cloud seeding, isn't that what cloud seeding is?
Yes. Yep. And in theory, yes, but you're talking about in a controlled environment, which the atmosphere is not.
Okay.
So, and in order to have all of those particulates generally in there, you don't have the other atmospheric conditions necessary to get rain anyway. Like I said, you've got to have basically a big dome of high pressure over you, a lot of heat, and that's what's going to create those. So it's kind of like they're on different planes, so to speak.
Meteorologist Jason Goff is our guest. Fred in Ulster is next. Fred.
Hi. Hi, Ray. Hi, Jason.
Hi.
Good afternoon. I have a point to make regarding a previous phone call having to do with weather and climate.
Yes.
And you had
And I find it to be a perfect allegory also to the workplace. But I can't give you a proper attribution as to who actually said it first.
Fair enough.
So in the meantime, the quote is, weather is what you expect and climate is what you get.
That's good.
Oh, good.
I like that.
I like it. Well, thank you, man. Appreciate the
call. That's all good,
call.
Fred. Thank you.
Over to Marianne in Gilligan's Island on Fultonville. You're on.
Oh, good afternoon. This question is not nearly as serious as most of the ones you've had before. It's just something that's annoying me for a long time.
Okay.
When you look at a picture, is there any way you can tell a sunrise from a sunset?
No.
I love it.
Unless you're intimately familiar with that area, you don't, because it's, you know, it kind of looks the same. So you're like, well, hey, I know that mountain. That's to the east. That's not a sunset or whatever. But
so the quality of the light is the same.
Yes.
Well, that's what I was trying to figure, because the edge, I think where the sun is, the edge is brighter and it's darker on further away, but still it doesn't make any difference.
Yeah,
ultimately, it
depends on the direction that you're looking and the time of day. That's it.
I got to tell you, I think that's a great question, Marianne. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye now. Over to Tim in East Greenbush. Tim, you're on with Jason Goff.
Hi, Jason. Hi, Ray.
Hey, Tim.
I know you're short on time. I'll be quick. Jason, hands down, you are my favorite local meteorologist.
There you go.
Well, thank you,
sir. Are you related to him in any way?
No.
No,
but,
checks in the mail.
You, I used back in the day, I worked at Channel 13, and I knew the meteorologist, and your delivery, you make sense out of the senseless, and I appreciate it. So my question is this. Tell me about, share with us your education, and at what point did you decide you wanted to be, you know, a meteorologist on TV and radio rather than a geek at a desk?
That's good. Well, first of all, your comments, you're too kind. Secondly, I'm a talker. Certainly my producers will tell you that. And so I just enjoy talking about the weather. So that was sort of a natural fit. I was always interested in weather from the time I was a little kid. It started actually from a fear of thunderstorms and then went on to try to forecast snow days because I like those.
Yeah.
Not because I wanted to miss school, because I got to make money. So then from there, you kind of go on and you have to do a lot of math and science. And then when you're actually trying to be on the air, that's the really difficult part, because it's literally like auditioning for anything else, a play or a movie or whatever. You have to be the right fit for a particular market, and you have to go where the jobs are. So that's where we are at.
Well, Tim, thank you so much for the call. Over quickly to Lou in Montague, Mass. Lou, you're on.
Hi, Ray and Jason. Thanks so much for taking my call today. I am a hot air balloonist, so I've got an enthusiastic interest in the weather. I've also got a very kind of intimate and interactive relationship with it.
Yes.
And two topics I thought might be interesting. One is the different types of fog, advection fog, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And a question that I don't know the answer to that I'm wondering, Jason, is what is the difference? You were talking about sleet before and freezing rain.
Mm-hmm.
What is the difference between sleet and hail?
That's a very good question, because a lot of people use those two words interchangeably, and they are completely different animals.
All right, you have 1 minute.
All right, I have 1 minute. So sleet is basically frozen rain, okay? It freezes on the way down. You'll get that in the colder weather. Hail is born from thunderstorms, and essentially you have frozen rain, but it makes several trips up and down in a cloud.
They're layers.
In a thunderstorm, yes, they're layers. You can actually saw through them and count the rings like on a tree, and that'll tell you how many times it's been thawed and refrozen. And that's why you see pictures of, you know, from a storm in Kansas, a baseball-sized hail. That's because they get some Mac Daddy storms around there. Now, the biggest hail I've seen around here is about 3 inches, which is big anywhere.
Absolutely.
But some of the hailstones out there are even bigger. It's because of the size of the storm. So hail, thunderstorms, sleet, cold weather. That's
and then what about
difference.
Fog difference? I've heard of ice fog and things like that.
Oh, there's all different kinds of fog, and you know, it depends on the temperature of the ground, the temperature of the air, and then you also get fog around water, bodies of water in the spring and in the fall, based on the differences in the air temperature and in a sense it's almost like a little mini lake effect when you're talking about bodies of water over land and fog.
There you go. Hey Lou, thanks for the call, we appreciate it very much. This one came in from Mike in Rexford via email. I love this question. Are airplanes visible on Doppler radar? What do they look like?
Hopefully not, because the way that Doppler radar works, you know, you would have, you know, as far as the weather Doppler radar goes. Now, different types of radar obviously track airplanes that are coming and going from airports. You have what are called terminal radars, and those are around airports. They'll measure wind changes in wind direction. They're looking for what's called wind shear and stuff like that, but it's a different kind of a thing. Now, you can pick up other things on radar. You can see flocks of birds.
Yeah.
You can see insects, all kinds of stuff, because essentially, real quickly, how radar works, it sends out a pulse of energy, and then it listens to get a return.
Right.
And if it's running into a flock of geese or a flock of monarch butterflies or something like that, you'll be able to actually see that. And you'll see it from time to time on different radars around the country.
How about UFOs? You get any?
Only three a year.
Okay, yeah, good. Yeah. Oh, that's good. Yep. Quickly, we only have about 30 seconds here. This is from Bruno. If it's 35 degrees outside and if the wind chill is 25, does water freeze?
No. Wind chill is only a perceived temperature for people and pets and things like that.
Jason Goff, it was great having you here. Have a great Christmas.
Thank you, sir. You do the same.
Enjoy this strange tradition you have of walking around looking at people in their last-minute shopping.
Oh, I love it. It'll be
Schadenfreude
fun.
There going on. Well, thanks, man. We appreciate it. We'll look for your newscast or your weathercasts on News Channel 13. Support comes from George Heigl, Cowan's representative, available for estate trust and full collection evaluations and consultations in the Capital Region. 518-396-7974. Identity Eyewear, Albany, New York, specializing in distinctive eyewear, including Zenka from Paris and Coco Song from Italy. Eye exams by appointment. EYEDENTITY Eyewear, Albany.com. Bodywork Professionals, licensed massage therapist, Latham and Saratoga. Handmade 2017 letterpress gift certificates available in shop or online. Your massage and bodywork experts, bodyworkprofessionals.com. And Real Seafood Company, Wolf Road, Colony, locally owned seafood restaurant and raw bar, realseafoodco.com. Thanks again to Jason Goff for being here today. Thanks to you for listening and for the great calls and emails. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Thanks to Deb Malik, who answered the phones. Jim Lavoulis is our producer. I'm Ray Graff. Well, if you are celebrating Christmas, have a very good one. Enjoy the start of Hanukkah. There'll be no Food Friday tomorrow, nor will there be a Medical Monday on Monday. So the next time we reconvene is Tuesday. Have a great holiday weekend. Happy holidays. Stay tuned now for news.